Coming up on today's episode, we break down the Jets' unfortunate loss in Toronto to the Leafs, plus more trade rumors, including some in Winnipeg, ahead of the deadline.
Hello, everybody. Recording live from somewhere.
What's good and welcome to another episode of Skates and Plates on the Hockey Podcast Network. I'm your host, Brandon Rewicki. You can follow me on Twitter at Brandon_Rewicki or the podcast at Skates Plates Pod. All right, bit of a bummer to head into the weekend after that one in TO, but we soldier on and we're here to break it all down for you guys as well. CJOB's Tyson Rewicki stopping by to join me once again. Tyson, what's going on? What's happening?
Sad. Just sad.
Pain. Yeah. There really is no sugarcoating it. A loss, like the hours after a loss to the Leafs, it does suck more than, and it's funny because I don't think I know anybody that's really a fan of the Leafs' actual rivals, but it feels like a loss to one of your hated rivals. You know what I mean? Like, it's just like it stings. For us, it's similar to losing to the Penguins. Like, it just, you know, it doesn't feel right. And yeah, it sucks that it happened to the Jets here in this one. And sucks too because I don't know. What did you think? Let's get right into it here. I didn't think they played all that bad, the Jets.
Yeah, it was that was a weird game because I don't think they played that bad either through long stretches in that game, especially the third period. I thought they really, for the most part, I mean, the Leafs had a couple shifts where they had their chances, and I mean, that's because you're pushing for offense in the third period down 3 goals. But I mean, I don't think they played bad overall, but it was just mistakes at the wrong times in games, and it was very glaring mistakes, right? Like, yeah. on Austin Matthews' second goal, there's Connor and Dubois are just puck watching, right? I mean, you got to have a guy on one of the best goal scorers in the NHL. He's just sitting right there in the open slot. And on that goal too, like, I mean, Hellebuck, by the time he's at the top of his paint, the puck's already whizzing by his ear. I mean, there's not like most. I think the Marner goal he could have had a chance on. Maybe that's one. It was a great shot, but it was a little bit further out. It was a clear shot, and like the pass, there was no pass there either. That was the other thing on that shot. So I mean, you probably like a save there, but at the same time, you can't be turning the puck over like that, just right at the blue line on the penalty kill or on the power play. Sorry, and yeah. It was just mistakes. Like, that was what killed them in this game. And the Leafs stars put the Leafs on the board whenever the Jets weren't there.
Yeah. You know, if you're going to make mistakes, try not to make them to Matthews and Marner.
Yeah.
I feel like that's, you know, if you're going to be a little bit sloppy with the puck, maybe keep it away from those two. Two unfortunate results from that game, Tice. First, the loss to the Leafs. Second, it's the end of Mark Scheifele's Selke campaign. That was the, I don't know if you remember the commercial. It was either Nike or And One, but Vince Carter was going one-on-one with some kid, and he goes, "You reach, I teach." Mark Scheifele reached, and then Austin Matthews taught a very embarrassing lesson on that play. It was not Scheifele's best game either by a long shot. That was way too much 2021 Mark Scheifele as opposed to the guy that we've seen pretty much all season long. I'm not gonna harp on him the same way I did last season because I think he's shown that's, you know, hopefully a thing of the past there. But hey, it was an ugly one, and it's pretty rare too that you say something like this. But it was an ugly game for Scheifele with the puck away from his stick, kind of normal, but uglier with the puck on his stick in this one. Like, it just wasn't his night. Like, he had an absolute howler of a game. And like you said there, that on the power play that the Jets had, yeah, it's peewee stuff, right? Like, you just can't make a, not a soft play, but just almost like a careless pass there, right? Especially with somebody who is what I feel like one of the actually better penalty killing forwards in the NHL and Mitch Marner. I'm not going to say Hellebuck needed or you would have liked to stop from Helly there. You know, it's an all-star player, putting it bar down from, you know, pretty decent spot in there. So, it was similar. If you're going to look to a comparison, I thought it was similar to the Detroit game a little while back. But I don't think the Jets were as turnover filled and error prone as they were in that game. It's just when they made a mistake, Toronto capitalized on it. And when the Jets had their chances, they didn't capitalize, but at the same time, Ilya Samsonov played his ass off. He was tremendous. That's I don't know if the Jets got goalied, but like whatever the tiny little level below that is, that's what the Jets got from Samsonov in that game.
Yeah, and you mentioned the poor puck luck for Scheifele in that one, but I think that was the whole line. Even like Ehlers and Barron, they had their chances for sure, and they just weren't able to pot any. What do you think about the new lines here? Like, do you think this is something that's going to stick for a little bit, or?
I hope not, to be honest. Now, yeah, and that was the big storyline heading into the game, was the switch up. I mean, really, in the top nine as a whole, I don't think I liked any of the lines, to be honest. I just, and it's, look, it was one game too, and sometimes, you don't get instant chemistry every time you change the lines. I think the best out of the bunch was Barron, Scheifele, Ehlers. I've said before, I think Morgan Barron, out of all the Jets bottom sixers, maybe has the most potential to fill a top six role because he's big, physical, fast, but he's got a decent pair of mitts on him. And he played pretty good in the game. I thought he was all right. It's just Scheifele, didn't have his best game, and Ehlers was just okay. But they had a few pretty good shifts, especially early on in the first period between those three. I thought, out of all their lines, they were able to generate the most at 5-on-5. Didn't like Wheeler's fit there on the quote-unquote top line with Dubois and Connor. Agreed. And we all, I think, saw it coming from a mile away, but Lowry and Perfetti are oil and water. They don't go together. I get Bones' thinking with, sitting down the kid for, not sitting him down, but just, taking away a bit of responsibility from him. He's a rookie. Peaks and valleys in his play is expected. It's just, it's not going to work between those two. And I think both of their games suffered for the switch up there.
Yeah, no, definitely. And it's just, with a guy like that skilled like Perfetti, it's just two different focuses from those, from with Lowry and Menelainen and Perfetti. I think
that's what it is. I think it was the fact that Menelainen was the other forward.
Yeah, right.
Like it's a weird mix, but like if you had someone like Gagne there, or even like a Barron or a Wheeler, for example, at least there's a little bit of offense all around there. Menelainen is just, I don't want to say where offense is supposed to die, but it's straightforward, no flash in the game, right to the net, shovel pucks there, try and get greasy, dirty ones. And you can't, I just don't think Perfetti's going to perform with two similar type guys like that in his line.
Yeah, and like that's been that line's mindset all year, right? Is getting the puck straight line, north, south hockey, get the pucks in, be hard on the puck, play the body. And it's just, Perfetti's just not there yet. It's like he gets bumped around. It's just a totally different mindset for him, especially going from playing with Scheifele and Wheeler, where you're kind of just an all offense line. I think it's definitely, I'm not going to say I don't think he can succeed in that situation, but at the same time, it's just not the best fit. And I think, like you said, it's one game. They're trying to mix stuff up. They played a really bad game in Montreal. We saw Scheifele get demoted to the fourth line. So the Eastern trip right here. It's not off to a great start, but we got a couple weaker teams coming up. So maybe we can get it a little bit of a split here and go home happy.
Oh, they got one weak as hell team coming up soon. So that hopefully should equal. If you lose that one, then we're in big time trouble. But we'll get to that a little bit later on in the episode there. One thing I wanted to bring up, I noticed it. Maybe it stuck out more in this game than in others. But I thought Nikolaj Ehlers, especially in this one, did you think he looked stiff at all?
I
haven't seen the explosiveness come back for him just yet. And that's, in a way, it's kind of good news that he's been as impactful as he has been, probably not anywhere near full strength. But I wonder, coming, not that he came back early, But you come back from a surgery like that, and then, you know, for the first time in a while, you kind of exert your body in a big way. I wonder if he's maybe a little sore and stiff, you know, just trying to get his way back into it. And, you know, maybe the All-Star break would be best for him more so than anybody. But I'm not going to say he looks hurt out there. I just think that we don't see the same dynamic attacking force, especially on the rush, that we're used to with him. Were you picking up on that, or am I just reading into something else?
No, I've definitely noticed that as well. And it's just, that's the thing with hernias, right? Is that it's a really touch and go kind of injury. Different guys react differently to the surgeries. Their bodies react differently. Like we've seen, I believe it was Brad Marchand had a hernia surgery too, right? This offseason. That's why he missed
hip or something around there.
Right. And well, so some players respond to that quickly, but then there's also some times where we saw this a couple of years ago with Claude Giroux, and he had some stinky seasons, right? Like he had that one season where he had 63 points, and everyone's like, oh, he's done. And well, it's just because your body's not reacting to the hernia surgery. And it's such a key part of your body as a hockey player that if it's not responding right, then it's just tough to get into a groove. And that's what I was a little bit concerned about hearing, that he was going to come back this early in January when the team was doing good. I mean, I don't want to say that I think that, I mean, hindsight's 2020, obviously, and he's producing still too, which is kind of crazy to think that he hasn't looked at as explosive as he has been, and he's still producing at almost a better clip than he has before. But yeah, I mean, we just got to get to the All-Star break healthy here. We can kind of avoid any major injuries right before here, get a nice rest for the boys. Yeah, knock on wood.
That's me hammering on my wood right now. What? But yeah, knock on wood, people. Make sure the bug that's been with this team all year, both physical and viral, just stays away for a little bit longer here. Look, the Jets aren't going to do it. No NHL team has really so far. I wouldn't mind taking a page out of the NBA's playbook here with a back-to-back on the weekend coming up and say, look, Nikki, we're going to sit you for one of these. You know what I mean? Like, just give a little bit of rest and relaxation on those joints. And then you got, like you mentioned, the All-Star break coming up, and then you're good to go after that. Sometimes those back-to-backs worry me a little bit. It's not going to happen. Just something that I think might be of use to the team. Could be a way to kind of, you know, help ease him back in. But yeah, the fun part is, you know, what is like 75% Nikolaj Ehlers right now at this point is like, what has he got? He's on pace for 100 points so far this year, like in an 82 game season. That's him at 70, 13 points in 9 games. That's him just kind of easing his way back in. Let's, you know, hopefully full strength comes right before the playoffs get underway there. A few other notes I want to touch on from the game there, Tice. We'll kind of shift away from the forwards for a little bit. I mean, there's one guy that we do have to touch on. He was one of the big stories out there in Montreal, and a lot of people were wondering how he'd perform in this game tonight. We'll touch on that, and then we'll also touch on a interesting Jets trade rumor that's not going to go away anytime soon. This one's going to keep popping up until it either happens or doesn't happen by March 1st. But before we get into all that, why not give a quick shout out here a little bit earlier on in the episode to our friends over at DraftKings Sportsbook. And why are we doing that? Well, the NFL divisional round is finally upon us. The weekend is here. Really great matchups, too. Like, there's not a stinker in the bunch. And DK is here to help you out with an interesting little offer where you can bet just 5 bones and get 200 in free bets instantly. I'll explain a little bit later. Plus, all new and existing customers can take a shot at an even bigger payout with stepped-up same-game parlays. Boost your winnings. You can add up to 100% with each leg that you win. Tyson, anything jumping out to you in the Elite Eight of the NFL this weekend?
Eagles are going to destroy the Giants. And that's just because everyone in the media is now, all the NFL pundits are going like, hey, the Giants look pretty good against the Vikings. Yeah, you want to know what the Eagles did against the Vikings? They smashed them. and they're going to smash the Giants too.
They did. That is true. And the Vikings just fired their DC, so maybe there's something to that. I kind of like the Bengals to take down the Bills, by the way. So if you want, and I mean, the spread was 6.5, 5.5. It's a crazy number. So, hey, there's a way you can jump in on this. If you want to grab the Eagles, grab the Bengals as well, make a little bit of money heading into the latter part of February, go ahead and do it with our friends there over at DraftKings. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use code THPN. New customers can bet $5 on the NFL divisional round and get 200 in free bets instantly. Only at DraftKings Sportsbook with code THPN. Minimum age and eligibility restrictions apply. See show notes for more details. I do like the Niners and the Chiefs to take care of business as well, by the way, if anybody was wondering about our picks there.
What about a little backdoor cover from the Jags?
What, do you know what the spread is?
I think
7.5?
Yeah, I think it was, might have been 8. Might have been 8.5.
Okay, yeah, I'm down. I like that. Dougie P will keep it close. He's going to empty out the playbook in this one.
Yeah, Chiefs will be up to 28-0, and then we'll see a 28-20 game when Vegas wins.
Hey, good teams win, great teams cover. The Jacksonville Jaguars are a great team. Let's hope they get it done on the point spread. I think Kansas City takes that one. But let's move back to hockey here quickly. We'll touch on, you know, one little piece from the game against Toronto for the Jets in their 4-1 loss to the Maple Leafs. Let's move to the blue line. And let me say this first, actually, just from a Toronto perspective. Maybe one of the sneakier moves this past offseason, and going back to last year's deadline, Mark Giordano's been a really good get for them. Like, to have him as almost a support piece, that, like, he's still good. He's still got a ton of game left. And he's at, what, 800K?
Yeah, exactly. The hometown discount. Like, and not only Gio, too, Connor Timmins. Like, they got him for literally nothing. Like, actually nothing. And he's been really good for them.
Yeah. Yeah. They've got good depth, the Leafs, on defense. You know, I think there's a valid question if Morgan Rielly is good enough to be the top guy on a team that goes deep, but they've got good depth. You know, they might be the deepest team on the blue line in the entire NHL. The Jets have good depth. I think Toronto has better. But speaking of depth, Ville Heinola, it's not outrageous to say, had a bit of a tough one in Montreal, especially that brief stint in the second period there where it was shift, goal against, shift, and then shift, goal against. Nobody really played good against Montreal, but, you know, unfortunately for Ville, it was a bit of a tough one for him there. But I was very intrigued to see his response in this game because I think in years past, he would have got the hook after a game like that against Montreal. But, you know, Bones and maybe management too, you can kind of, you know, tag them both together here. They haven't been hesitant to throw him back in there and give him a stretch of games. And while he hasn't played, you know, 30 games this year, they're giving him a chance. They're giving him some run out there. And to put him with Nate Schmidt, you know, a guy that's been really steady for the Jets all year long, I was intrigued to see what the response was going to be like. And I don't want to make definitive statements on somebody's career after one game or after two bad games on this road trip even. But I don't know, Tice. I don't know if the kid's got what it takes to be a top four guy. I think he's an NHLer. I think he can certainly help out in the power play. But, you know, going up against a team like Toronto, who have a ton of skill, a ton of speed up front, and are a decent forechecking team, he looks hesitant out there. Like you're not getting full attack Ville Heinola. And I don't know what it's going to take at this point to get that guy out of him or if it's even there, you know what I mean? And again, I hate to just, you know, kind of harp on the kid a little bit, but he was one of the big storylines going into the game. I didn't think he covered himself in glory in this one. He was better than he was in Montreal, but, you know, there were just a number of shifts where, you know, whether it was speed to the outside, difficulty handling that, size and strength battles, wasn't winning any of those. and then just timid in terms of trying to get the offense going back the other way. And if you're not gonna help out in those areas, I'm sorry, you're just not gonna help out this team a whole bunch. And yeah. I think it's fair to say that, you know, when Dylan Sandberg, whenever it is that he's ready to go after he comes back from this illness, there's just no doubt that Sandberg's been the better defenseman between the two this year. But again, it shines a light on what the future and the potential is for Ville, both at the NHL level and with the Winnipeg Jets.
Yeah, and you mentioned his timid play and getting the puck up ice. It's, I don't know if you noticed this, but especially towards the end of the third period, I kind of thought that they were avoiding giving him the puck. There was especially one play where Schmidt went back to retrieve the puck, and Hanola kind of went behind the net, and Schmidt, like, he had an easy chip to behind the net to Hanola, and he kind of made a higher risk play going up the boards to Scheifele. I mean, maybe it might have just been a poor decision by Schmidt in the moment, but I mean, even in the offensive zone, it just seemed like guys were like, I don't know if I can give him the puck. Like, I honestly don't think I can give him the puck right now. And it's concerning because the areas of his play that he struggled with so far in his career, and more so this season, it doesn't seem like there's a huge improvement either. Like, it doesn't seem like it's getting better as the more games he gets. And you just start to get to a certain point where, you know, maybe he's just not, and I hate to say it, he might just not be good. Like, he just might not be that quality defender that they took in the first round that they thought they were going to get. And you're not going to hit on every first round pick, but it's just, I mean, we look at, like you mentioned, a guy like Dylan Sandberg, and he's had some rough games. He's had some rough moments, but I feel like a big highlight for me for Sandberg was the Tampa game, where he really struggled in that first period against Tampa, but Bones was able to keep putting him out there in the second and third period. And I thought he really responded nicely in those second and third periods. When Hanola makes a mistake, it kind of seems like it just tumbles and it tumbles and it gets worse. Like the Montreal game, there was a lot of shifts where he looked like a fish out of water. It was just, I mean, the Hoffman goal, he was defending a pass where there was no one to pass to. He let Hoffman walk right in. The first Montreal goal was a terrible turnover to start that whole sequence. And then it was kind of just a cluster, you know what, after that turnover. I don't know what you do with him. I think at this point, he's got to be included in a trade package now before teams start to kind of realize that, hey, he has this pedigree, but he might not be living up to it.
Yeah, it does kind of feel like it's the beginning of the end of his tenure here with the Jets. I'm kind of on the same page with you there. I mean, now if he's not one of your, when Sandberg's healthy, six best defensemen, people might scoff at this, but I mean, Logan Stanley's numbers this season have been pretty good when he's gotten a chance to play too. And then you have, I mean, Declan Chisholm waiting in the wings as well. A few other guys down there with the Moose that have looked pretty good. You know, now might be the time to cash in on that if you're going to do something and maybe try to make a big splash. And like you said, you know, teams will look at the first round pedigree and think, you know, in our environment, we can change him. So I think there's still value for him to be had league wide here. It's just rough start to this road trip here, and he's had good games for the team, games where you think he might be a guy, but they're few and far between. And I think we've just seen too many nights like this where, and I could almost live with it if he was bringing the offense and there's these defensive miscues, right? Like that to me is one thing, but we're not seeing the offense either. Like that's what you're supposed to do, like be an offensive guy. If you don't have that, then there's nothing that is bringing value to the team right now. So that's the thing for me. And that's what people always say with youngsters, you know, they got to worry about defense, worry about this. No, if you're an offensive guy, bring the offense. We'll worry about the other stuff later. But if you can't bring what you were supposed to, then what are we doing?
Yeah. And to think coming into the season too, he would, you hear his agent's comments and you think, man, this guy's one of the most confident guys in the room. He thinks that he's made one of these top six NHL defenders replaceable, and he hasn't proven it. You can't go out making those kinds of statements and then that's the kind of play you show the team. I mean, we don't know what's happening inside the room, but I don't know what's going on with Ville in this organization right now. I will say this, I don't really put any blame on the organization at all.
No, not this year. I think in years past, really the lockout shortened year when he was in the press box forever. That was on the team. They messed that one up. But this season in particular, I think they've given him a long rope. I think they've given him a lot of opportunity, and he just hasn't taken it yet. And we've seen Dylan Sandberg have those opportunities and play much, much better if you're comparing just those two players together there. Sure, there's some vets that have struggled, but I don't know. I know everybody gets on Neil Pionk, and he hasn't been very good this year, but we must be watching two different games out there if you think that Ville for Pionk is going to be an improvement on. Like, it's just it's not right now. So we'll see how that goes here. We'll see what happens and what the lineup changes are going to be heading into a back-to-back here for the Jets. But I personally think that the clock is ticking and time is running out on Ville to make an impression to stay up with the big club long-term here. We'll see if that's before the deadline or after that when it comes. But, I do think we're starting to see the beginning of the end of number 14 here with the Jets. Speaking of the deadline, that's kind of where we'll wrap up this episode here. And we've touched on this a little bit, Tyson, but it's picking up a little bit of steam. And I think you said it, it's not going away. It's not going away until either he's coming here or he goes somewhere else or he stays over there. But we got some intriguing information on the Jonathan Toews to Winnipeg front. Elliot Friedman. I mean, it sounds like the reports are that there is definitely interest from Toews' side to come to Winnipeg, and at least a sliver of interest from Winnipeg in bringing the local boy back home. But we got our first sense of what the ask is going to be, reportedly. And that's always been the big one with this, right? Because it's a big salary coming back the other way, and there might not be all that many teams that are going to be in the running even to bring a Jonathan Toews over, let alone have the cap space to do so. But let's talk about the offer, Tyson, according to Elliot Friedman. A second and a third round pick. Not a first, but a second and a third round pick for Jonathan Toews. If you are GM Kevin Cheveldayoff and it's a take it or leave a moment, is this an offer he can't refuse? Or do you say, thanks, but no thanks, we'll take our business elsewhere?
If it's included that Toews' contract is being retained at 50%,
I think that's the only way any trade happens. So
I honestly do the deal today. I get it done as soon as possible. I honestly think that. I think especially with some of the prices that we're hearing on some other players, I think if you can set the market early and get a guy like Jonathan Toews, and that's a reasonable price for the kind of championship pedigree that he's going to carry, the intangibles that he's going to bring to this team. And he's having a good season. He's on pace for a 50-point season. He's on pace for 24 goals. I'd totally take him in this bottom six, top six even. And the one thing that he's going to help a ton on, too, is in the faceoff dot, right?
Ding, like, ding, ding.
Like it's kind of been a little bit of a soft spot for the Jets this season. So getting a guy like Toews, I think I'd do it right away. I'd do it right away before someone else makes a trade and maybe Toews' price goes up a little bit. I'm all for being proactive and getting the deals done as quickly as possible.
That is, I think that is definitely the preferred option. If it's available to you, sometimes that's not the case. So, I'm not totally sure. I mean, you'd like him here, next week as opposed to a month and a half from now. Just taking a look at things, the Jets don't have a second round pick this year. They have their thirds locked up for a while, so there'd have to be a little bit of finagling in terms of what year the pick goes to and all that. I kind of have two caveats with a Toews trade. The main one being, and this is really the only reason I would be hesitant to potentially go after him, is that I still think there's a major hole on this team in terms of the second pair behind Josh Morrissey. And if a Toews trade precludes you from getting that guy, then I would pump the brakes on that. I think there's a bigger need right now. For example, I think the Jets would be better suited pushing a ton of assets to get into high-end blue liner, slotting him in on the second pair, and then you have Morrissey and defenseman X out there on the ice for you know, 50 minutes of a 60-minute playoff game. I think there's a lot more value in that for the team. And then go bargain shopping for a forward. I mean, there's always a forward or two that you can get on the cheap at the trade deadline that can fit into the middle six somewhere. Maybe not, I mean, not with the pedigree Taves has, but maybe he has some playoff experience and things like that. So that's the one thing is that, like, to me, goal number one is the blue line first and foremost, and then we attack the forward mix that you have up front. Then, you know, if that isn't the case and you're able to grab him and you know, maybe make a bit of a run for this year at the very least, and then we'll see what happens after that, then I probably make the move. Because, I mean, he can still play right now. That's kind of the main thing. You know, this isn't Duncan Keith going to the Oilers. You know what I mean? Like, there's still a ton of actual value he's going to provide to the team. He's on pace for exactly 50 points this year. Plays 18 minutes a night. So there's certainly a spot for him inside the middle six for the Jets. But there's no denying that what he would bring intangibles-wise is almost worth the investment itself, right? And people are going to point to and say, man, like, wouldn't he be such a good influence on Perfetti and these young, you know, rookies? No, I think it's anyone under 30. Like, seriously, you're telling me Mark Scheifele wouldn't gain some advantages by playing and learning some of what Jonathan Toews has to offer? Dubois? Like, you're telling me PLD wouldn't be able to pick up a little bit of that? And then Ehlers, Connor go up and down the list there. Blue liners too? Like, I think there's just so much value in grabbing somebody like that. And then, like you said, the face-off problem gets fixed to a degree at the very least. And all of a sudden, your mix in that top nine is really, really potent. And you get a ton of options. There's a lot of versatility as well. You know, Scheifele, we know he can play out there on the wing if need be. I'm sure Taves can do the same. If you want Scheifele down the middle as well, you get an extra penalty killer up on top of it as well. I don't think there's a lot of downsides to me in this deal. The only downside for me is just, is it going to stop you from maybe making a splash on the back end? And that's not really a Taves issue per se. But if we're looking at the trade specifically in a vacuum, I gotta think 75% of Jets fans would be okay with that ask.
Yeah, no, for sure. Like, yeah, I agree with you 100% that a defense is the number one option. But I just think that adding a guy like Taves, you get it done and you figure it out from there. I think that's kind of like, I mean, either way, you're going to have to make some moves if you want to get both those guys. And I think the way the season's going, I think the Jets should make these moves to acquire some two high impact guys like Taves and whoever it would be on the back end. I think it's important to go all in this year. I think this is a really important year for the franchise. And knowing we know how loyal True North is and everything, you're telling me that Jonathan Taves wouldn't be re-signing in Winnipeg if he gets traded here? Like, that's wow. The other thing, I think.
Nice. What I mean, I was just going to say, we were just talking about Mark Giordano, and, you know, I know Johnny Taves is coming off a $10 million cap hit. I mean, you want to help the boys out and make $900K, and you know what? Maybe the club will chip in and toss in a cabin at Lake of the Woods for you on top of that. Like, I don't know. I think that's certainly a possibility too. But I think for me, the most comforting thing has been that surprisingly management has not shied away from the fact that they know this is an important year, right? Like, Chevy, a lot of the times will do a pretty good job at keeping it close to the vest. But I think this year more than any, he's like, yeah, we're probably going big time at the deadline here. Like, without saying it, without necessarily saying it, but it's like, yeah, we might not be making a pick too early in the upcoming draft, but it's all going to be worth it, hopefully, by the end of it. So this is always fascinating to me because there's so many different dominoes that have to fall. Like you mentioned, the timing. Do you go after Taves first? But if you do that, then does that stop you from doing this a little bit later on? Do you maybe wait on this closer to the deadline because somebody else might pop up as well, a la Paul Stastny a few years back with St. Louis? Like, so many moving parts here. There's not necessarily a right or wrong answer on this just yet, but it does feel like the stars are starting to align on the hometown boy, really the first hometown boy, truly suiting up for the club and making a major impact.
Yeah, and the other reason I think that being aggressive would be good is I want to see Colorado, I want to see Minnesota, and I want to see Dallas get a little bit desperate. I want the Jets to make a move, and then all of a sudden Colorado's sitting there like, hey, we got a pretty big hole here at our second line center. Like, we got to figure something out. And then that's where teams make panic moves, and that's where they lose pieces to their future that they could use. So I think there's some advantages to being aggressive and being the first team in the division to make a trade.
I don't think I want to see Colorado get desperate. That's terrifying. Right? Like, oh, we better get a second line center. Wham! Yes. Uh-oh, they're gonna get it. That's a problem. That's a scary thing too. Like, if the Jets finish one or two, where does Colorado finish? You know, when everything's said and done, that would be just the Jets' luck this year to finish with the top seed and then draw the wild card Avalanche in round one. That's a problem to worry about in the future, though. I mean,
just a point on the Leafs Jets game that I forgot to mention. This is a classic game that shows why Bettman doesn't actually pay attention to the NHL, because he goes up on his press conference late December, early January. We need more division games to create rivalries. We need to get more of these division rivals going. Jets and Leafs, like, it wasn't the Jets' night, but you can't deny that was high level. Those were two high level teams playing tonight, and you can feel the intensity on the ice, and that's just like, that's what you need more of. You want the rivalries to build naturally instead of just this force cramming Jets Dallas here. Have more. Like, these are the games I want to watch. I don't care about a Jets Blackhawks rivalry.
You want to watch the best players go up against the best players. The NBA gets it. The NHL hasn't and likely won't get it anytime soon. So like you said, get excited for Jets Chicago and then Jets Houston for the next. Oh, well, we'll see about that. But I'm with you there, Tice. I like variety. It's not like the NFL where divisional battles like legitimately matter. It's a bit of a different animal when it comes to the NHL. But oh well. We'll worry about that later on. Hopefully it doesn't mean that we see Jets Avalanche in round one. But again, a problem for future us to worry about. In the meantime, we'll worry about a busy weekend for the Jets coming up here out on the road as they continue their five-game road trip. But that's going to do it for today's episode. We'll wrap it up there. Would love to know your thoughts, by the way, on a potential Taves to Winnipeg move. Let us know on Twitter at Brandon_Rewicki. At Skates Plates Pod and
at Tyson Rewicki.
Very good. Good job remembering. we'll get back at it next week. Like I said, busy one for the Jets this weekend. A back-to-back starts off tough, ends off nice and easy. A matchup against the Red Wings on Saturday, and then 2 points just waiting to be had in Philadelphia on a Sunday where nobody will care because the entire city will be wasted after Eagles Giants the night before. So we'll break down those two games for you guys and then get ready for the week to come for the Winnipeg Jets as they cap off their five-game road trip later on. Until then, though, thank you so much for listening to another episode of Skates and Plates here on the Hockey Podcast Network. I'm your host, Brandon Rewicki, here once again with CJOB's Tyson Rewicki. We'll talk to you guys on Tuesday morning. Until then, stay safe and enjoy the weekend, everybody. Peace.